The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.
Blazers season of mixed results, depending on which way you want to have this season go. I wanted to flunk for flag.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that would be a good thing. They have not. They definitely have not. But what has it done to trade assets here in Portland? And as the young guys have developed and have looked a lot better, and the future does look bright for several of them, you have seen a depression in the value of some of the veterans that we were talking about. And Jeremy Grant's an interesting one because he does have a contract that is friendly to trade in the current market because it's, what, $29 million? Is that what it is?
I'd have to double check year to year, but it goes up to 33, I think, at the year.
Yeah.
33 or 34.
Which is still affordable, but...
It's the years more than anything
has
else.
The player lived up to it, right? And what is his trade market right now?
That's going to be an interesting thing because Jeremy had probably his worst year from two as a pro. And I'd look at it more as a one-off than anything else because... It just happens.
Not a great time for a one-off year, though.
No, definitely not. But the one thing that he does do still is hit threes at a pretty good clip. I saw somebody like, Jeremy can't hit threes this year. I'm like, he's shooting 37% from three, guys. Like,
that seems good.
On volume. Like, and he's the previous 2 years, he was at 40% on volume. Like,
all right.
And he's still a plus defender. Like, now... Does a team out there want to pay $30 million for that if he's not going to be able... If I think he was like 37% on twos this year, remember right? Like he was shooting basically the same from three as he was from two.
Gross.
Which is just super weird, especially considering a guy that's averaged basically 20-ish, 20-plus a game for the last 4 years. Like that's a little bit... Like I think there was... I think Jeremy was frustrated this year.
Okay.
Just not only how it started, but kind of knowing what this season was supposed to be in the sense of, you know, you heard just on the public stuff from the front office.
Yeah.
There wasn't a mention about wins.
Yeah.
It was about development and data and all like, and like when you're, you know, 30 years old and you're in year 11, let's be honest, it's not a place you want to be.
And he's got three more years after this one. Mm-hmm. He's got 32, 34, and then $36 million on a player option, mm-hmm. which I'm assuming he would take at 34 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it all comes down to, is there a team that's out there? I mean, number one, there are teams out there that want Jeremy Grant. I know that for a fact. But it's about what the Blazers want in return. What I'm wondering is there a point this gets to, though? Let's say the Blazers in the draft, they end up drafting Asa Newell. Let's say that they're picking 10th or something. They end up drafting a wingish forward type.
Yeah.
And now you're kind of running out of space and you're up against it. So I kind of wonder which way the Blazers are going to go. Number one, the biggest key date coming up is the lottery. The lottery is going to determine basically every single thing the Blazers do. If they move into the top four, it changes a lot. If they somehow magically get number one, it changes everything. If they end up picking 8, 9, or 10, it changes what path they'll go down. It changes the value of their assets, what their plan becomes, what they can target, what they can go do. Let's say they land third and Ace Bailey's the number one player on their board at that spot. Well, you want to probably get two Ace Denny on the floor. Well, who does that squeeze out? Squeezes out one of Shaden or Jeremy. And they're probably going to side with Shaden.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to make a move, I think after the lottery, you're at the combine, you're going to start getting pretty heavy into what you're going to try to do.
And can we start framing this not as what the Blazers want in return,
mm-hmm.
rather how Joe Cronin can sell Jeremy Grant?
Mm.
Because that's a big thing. And that's the thing that is frustrating and tiring, I think, for a lot of fans, is that the whole idea of, well, the return just wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
The job of the general manager is to create the return.
Sure.
It's not just nobody wanted to play ball. No, because the GM's job is to get people to play ball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is part of how you operate. And for as good and I think it's undeniable right now that this front office in evaluating talent mm-hmm. in the draft and young players, it's really damn good.
Yeah.
From whether it is Donovan Klingon mm-hmm. or trading for guys like Denny Avdia and Tumani Kamara mm-hmm. who are young and they've evaluated all these guys. Like you highlighted this after the trade for Denny Avdia. Mike Schmidt's draft profile of Denny Avdia when he was drafted, he had a tweet out saying this guy's going to be the damn steal of the draft. Mm-hmm. And he identified that when he wasn't even in a front office. Yeah. Right. They are really good
yeah.
at evaluating young players and role players, right? You luck into stars, but finding role players, that is a valuable asset.
It is.
And it is a very valuable tool. But you need to start finding the other component of being a GM is you got to find those partners and build those relationships that you can trade for a guy.
And if you're a push all in kind of guy, and again, I'm not saying all in for like a 27 or 28 year old star. What you're looking at are the quote unquote depressed asset stars. That is your LaMelo Ball. That is your Zion Williamson. That is your possibly Ja Morant. But here's the thing. When I hear those names, I don't want to.
No.
I don't like the Denny trade, like to me, the perfect version of that trade is going a step above him and taking a swing on, or not even taking a swing on, but like if you're going to push all in for a super young wing, it's like a Franz Wagner.
Yeah.
And now he might be so good that you might not be able to get him even if you put up basically everything that you have. Like if you went to the Orlando Magic right now and asked them who they want to build their team with, I think publicly they'd say Paolo and Franz, but I think if you held a gun to their head and said one or the other, I think they might say Franz.
Really?
I do.
Well, then go get Paolo Banchero.
Seattle guy.
Bring it back to the Northwest.
But like those are the kind of moves that you're looking at if you're looking at like getting a young.
But the reality
star
is
star player. They're going to be distressed.
The thing that about those Paolo and Franz, mm-hmm. they have their games where they hit largely and against really good teams. They do not play well alongside each other.
And that's the thing is like you were hoping that maybe paying them both was going to sort out some of the pecking order stuff. Mm. But it might be that they're both kind of 1As. You know what I mean? Like
yep.
in it and. Everybody sits here as a fan and says, well, they just need to kind of figure it out. It's like, no, man, when you got two guys that are both young and they're both clawing for every last thing, sometimes it just doesn't work. Now, we went through this with Jalen and Jason, Tatum and Brown in Boston over years, but that pecking order kind of sorted itself out.
And Paolo and Franz play too similarly.
Yes, that was
the Jays didn't.
There was at least enough delineation between them. You were like
you could find roles in Boston.
Yeah, like you like you know, Jalen's a little bit more downhill. Like you could be like, okay,
yeah.
like that's maybe where we can get something here. Franz and Paolo are both just 6'9", 6'10" wrecking balls that want to have that obscene rim pressure.
Yeah.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Franz has shown a little bit more proclivity to be a shooter, while Paolo is not. The crazy thing about a guy like Franz is, like, you look at him this season, he's 25-5-5, and he is 23 years old.
Yeah, let's go, baby.
It's like, oh.
Yeah.
Maybe there's like the question again with him becomes shooting. And then you start talking about like what you're doing with this Blazers team. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. If they make whatever move of the guys that I just named, even like Franz and Paolo, okay, Ja, Zion, LaMelo, what do none of them have?
Playoff experience.
Well, not just that, shooting.
Yeah.
And this is already a team that is limited on shooting.
And that's why we have the Knip slip. Con Knipple's going to fix that problem, right?
Like, it was like, well, LaMelo Ball. LaMelo took 11 threes a game this year, and he shot 33%.
Damn, dog. That's, like, you know, Shane Sharp.
Yeah, I mean, on more volume.
Yeah.
Like, that's the crazy thing. And, like, and again, you're talking about those guys. Like, yeah, there's obscene talent with the LaMelo, Job, Zion guys, but they all, there's a reason why there's murmurings in the NBA world around them. With LaMelo, it's like, does he give a damn? With Ja, like, what stupid thing is he going to do next? With Zion, it's his weight, injuries, and can he stay out of the bat-ass crazy world of women? Like, don't get me wrong, there's certain proclivities around the NBA, but there's a sliding scale of those proclivities. And, like, there's a reason why those guys are even remotely available.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's like, that this is always the issue when you're talking about team building. If you're going to go get a young player and not even accelerate, but just kind of push your timeline forward, number one, what is the cost and what are the risks that you're going to take on?
Yeah.
And it's like, there's no Jimmy Butler that's out there right now in his prime where you're like, you can go make that deal.
Well, you got to go create that. Like, yeah, that's because those deals have also been created.
Mm-hmm.
Right, where guys become available because conversations, relationships are built.
And also playoff failures. That's the thing, is like when the playoffs, when the teams get bounced a little bit early, that's when you can start looking at things.
Right. Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.